Hej Kasper.
Hej Ulrik.
Direkte fra Tivoli Hotel i København til studie 6505 i DR-byen. Direkte fra interview med præsidenten for den europæiske centralbank til sorte tal.
Ja.
Kasper, du har lige lavet et interview med Christine Lagarde med ét ord. Hvordan vil du så beskrive hende?
Jeg kan ikke nøjes med et. Jeg bliver nødt til at bruge to.
Kom med det.
Jeg synes, hun er spændende.
Mm.
Og du synes også, hun er en lille smule skrab.
Spændende og skrab, det er godt.
So we still have uncertainty around, and everybody has to deal with it.
Det her, det er sorte tal, og kvindelig lige hørt, det var Christine Lagarde, der både er spændende og skrab og præsident for den europæiske centralbank. Og hende skal vi høre meget mere til i den her episode, og hvad hun tænker om den usikkerhed, hun lige nævnte, og hvad den har af helt konkret betydning for dansk økonomi. Det her, det er DR's business podcast, hvor vi stiller skarp på de største danske virksomheder og så verden rundt om dem. Mit navn er Ulrik Rosenqvist, og normalt så udkommer vi om mandagen. Men den her episode, det er sådan en lille lækker ekstra special på en lørdag, Kasper. Ja, Kasper Schrøder, DR's økonomikorrespondent. Fortæl mig lige en gang, hvorfor er det, at vi... jeg har måttet flytte min krøftenreservation en time, for at vi kunne lave den her optagelse, Kasper. Hvorfor er det så vigtigt at lytte efter, når Christine Lagarde taler?
Altså, Christine Lagarde slår Skipper Lapskovs i grøften.
Ja, okay.
Til enhver tid.
Det er også lidt, hvad hedder det, Wiener Schnitzel kind of guy derinde.
Ja, men hun er også deroppe.
Ja, okay, godt så.
Så det er helt på sin plads, Ulrik, at du har måttet flytte den. Altså, Christine Lagarde er jo en del af den absolute globale magtelite og har været det i årtier. Fransk finansminister først, ikke?
Mm.
For øvrigt en lang karriere som leder af et stort advokathus i USA først. Så blev hun fransk finansminister. Så blev hun øverste direktør for den internationale valutafond. En af verdens mest magtfulde positioner i dag. Leder af den europæiske centralbank, der står bag euroen.
Mm.
Der styrer renterne i eurozonen. Man kan bare lige prøve at google derude, ikke, hvem hun ikke har trykket i hånden de seneste 10 år.
Mm.
Så får man altså Trump og Putin og Xi Jinping og...
Og Kasper Schrøder.
Og nu også Kasper Schrøder til min egen store overraskelse.
Ja, præcis. Og jeg vil lige sige, hvis man lytter til det her nu og kun lige har 20 minutter... inden man skal ud og til eftermiddagskaffe hos svigermekanikken, så kan man inden det her lyd altså springe frem til interviewet, hvis man lige vil springe over, hvor Kasper så mine indledende stregøvelser her. Fordi Kasper, der er jo nogle ting i sorte tal, som jeg synes, vi skal have med, selvom det er en special det her. Vi plejer jo altid lige at tage smut forbi LinkedIn. Så du, at Christine Lagarde, hun nævnte dig på LinkedIn i dag?
Nej.
Jo, eller sådan indirekte. Jeg prøver lige at finde det her engang.
Jeg var dog ikke tagget.
Du var ikke tagget, nej. Men hun lagde et opslag op på LinkedIn, hvor hun skrev, jeg er i København, og jeg skal mødes med de europæiske finansminister, og så senere skal jeg tale med Danish TV. Og hun lagde en video op, og du, lad os lige prøve at høre, hvad det var, hun sagde, og så kan det være, at du kan oversætte for mig både til dansk og til et sprog, som vi alle sammen forstår, hvad det rent faktisk er, hun laver i København. Videoen kommer her.
Hello, good morning. I'm in Copenhagen today, and we have the meeting of the Eurogroup and the ECOFIN. It's informal, which doesn't mean that we are not formal, but the discussions we have will not lead to formal conclusions or decisions, but it's a good opportunity to discuss, one, the economic outlook. We will comment on our projections and compare with the Commission, and more importantly, we will discuss our digital euro. And I hope very much that we have an agreement amongst the finance ministers concerning the ceiling, the threshold, and those are technical issues, but they are critically important for the success of our digital euro. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned og god morgen. Og så står hun med en lille mikrofon, som alle influencer på TikTok, sådan, hvor de står den med den op i munden. Kasper, helt præcist, hvad er det, Christine Lagarde laver i Danmark de her dage?
Jamen, hun har jo været en kæmpe influencer for mig de sidste 10-15 år. Det vil jeg bare sige.
Ja, okay.
Altså, jeg følger hende i tykt og tyndt.
Godt.
Jeg synes, det er helt naturligt med den, at hun også har sådan en der lille bit mikrofon.
Ja, en lille influencer-mikrofon.
Christine Lagarde er i København, fordi at Europas finans- og økonomiminister mødes, som hun fortalte her, for at snakke om, hvordan det lige går. Og så har de det her særemne omkring den digitale euro, som jeg ærligt talt ikke skal kloge mig på, men som er et forsøg på at digitalisere euroen, også som et svar på nogle af de kryptovalutaer, der kommer frem, og de tekniske muligheder inden for stablecoins, som nogen måske har hørt om. Mm. Og hvorfor er Christine Lagarde med der? Hun er jo ikke minister. Hun er jo præsident for den europæiske centralbank. Hun er der for at give input, sådan at sige, hvordan hun synes, det går med økonomien, og være med til at diskutere nogle af de store temaer.
Og så ved jeg, hun skulle på kanalrundfart. Efter du havde talt med hende, så skulle hun på kanalrundfart.
Et godt bud, hvis hun altså nåede det, er, at hun lige nu er på kanalrundfart med alle nationalbankdirektører fra Europa, som også er i København. Mm. What a boat. Jeg gad godt være med. Jeg ved ikke med dig.
Jo, men ved du hvad, Kasper, jeg tror, nu siger du, hvis hun nåede det, jeg tror altså, at den ventede. Hvis det er sådan en, de har hyret, jeg tror ikke, at hun står i kø nede i Nyhavn sammen med de andre turister.
Du tror ikke, det er Netto-bådene?
Nej, det tror jeg ikke. Og så skulle hun ud og spise bagefter.
Der er en stor middag for den samme kreds efterfølgende.
Ja, i grøften.
I på Glyptoteket, så ikke så langt.
Hallo, det er en spytbat derfra. Nå, en anden ting, vi har her i sorte tal, som jeg synes, vi også skal have med, selvom det er en lille special udgave, det er jo selvfølgelig ugens tal.
13.663.
30.000.
Det er 16.000 kroner.
Ugens tal, Sune. Guldet er dit.
519.
799.
Du har ikke en chance.
84.
Tallet er 304 milliarder.
Ja, det er rigtigt.
Og Kasper, i dag normalt, der plejer Sune at sidde og gætte os frem og tilbage, og det kan nogle gange trække ud og sådan noget, men vi skal jo også på weekend på et tidspunkt, Kasper. Så jeg tænker, i dag vil jeg bare give dig tallet, og så kan du lade dig overraske af det. Du må selvfølgelig godt prøve hurtigt at gætte, men ellers så får du det bare. Og et ugens tal, som siger noget om Christine Lagarde, som jeg faldt over. Det kan også være, at du har faldet over det i din research, eller i den periode, hvor du har følt Christine Lagarde. Det er 1974. Jeg faldt bare over historien om, at i 1974, der var Christine Lagarde lige blevet bachelor tilbage i Frankrig, og så kom hun på sådan en slags, jeg ved ikke, hvad det danske par gange er, hun kom på sådan en udvekslingsophold i USA, og i den forbindelse, så var der en republikansk kongresmedlem i Maine, som skulle bruge en studentermedhjælper. Har du hørt den her historie før? Det er noget, hun et interview hun gav i Washington Post, så jeg for 10 år siden, hvor hun så blev ansat, fordi at han havde brug for en, der kunne tale fransk, fordi i Maine, der bor ret mange, der taler fransk, kvæg, at det ligger lige op ad den kanadiske grænse. Og han, det her kongresmedlem, som senere blev forsvarsminister i USA, han sad i den komité, der skulle finde ud af, om de skulle impeache Nixon. Så hun siger, at da hun så sad på kontor, så fik hun jo masser af breve ind fra hans vælgere, der hvor på den ene side der stod rigsret, og på den anden side stod der ikke rigsret, som hun så sad oversat. Hun siger, at det moment i hendes karriere, og det var en spæde karriere, det har simpelthen givet hende en forståelse af det der med, sådan, der, hvordan man sådan samler folk, der er uenige. Altså det der med at høre mange synspunkter, så koge det ned. Og så nu præsident for den europæiske centralbank, hun har altså været vidt omkring.
Hun har nemlig været vidt omkring, og det at hun i midten af 70'erne har siddet så centralt som så ungt et menneske, kan også være med til at forklare den bane gennem den globale elite, som hun siden har taget. Ja. For der er ikke så mange mennesker i Danmark, hvor lige ringer en klokke, når man hører navnet Christine Lagarde.
Nej.
Men vi er altså oppe i de allerøverste luftlag.
Ja, og hun er faktisk slet ikke økonom. Hun er jurist. Så vil bare sige, hvis man sidder derude og har store karriereplaner inden for den økonomiske verden, så behøves man ikke at være økonom. Jeg tænkte faktisk, Kasper, og vi skal snart til det interview, men jeg tænkte faktisk, da jeg læste op på hende, så tænkte jeg, hun minder lidt om mig. Og ved du hvorfor? Fordi der var to ting, hvor jeg sagde sådan, det er mig. Og vi kommer også til at høre, at du spørger ind til begge ting i interviewet. Det er et, hun har altid kontanter på sig. Det har jeg også altid. Altså det er simpelthen, hende og jeg, vi er alligevel to forskellige generationer, men det der med at altid have lidt cash på sig, det er sgu egentlig meget rart.
Christine Lagarde elsker kontanter.
Ja, og du tror ikke bare, det er noget, hun siger, fordi du ved, hun er euroen.
Ej, men hvis du, hvis du var den, der skrev under på pengesedlerne, ville du så ikke altid lige gå rundt med et par stykker af dem? Så du kunne vise dem frem?
Jo, det er sådan en rimelig flex. Og så to, så har hun jo en tidligere karriere som synkronsvømmer.
Det har hun nemlig.
Dage, noget, som hun bruger i sin karriere, og i hvad hedder det, når hun mødes med folk, og det kan man jo selvfølgelig høre i det interview, du kom lige om lidt. Og jeg har jo også engang stiftet bekendtskab med synkronsvømning, så jeg var sådan, jeg ved, hvor hårdt det er at være synkronsvømmer, så jeg føler virkelig sådan, vi har en eller anden skæbne fællesskab, eller Christine Lagarde og jeg. Nå, Kasper, nu skal vi til det interview. Når Christine Lagarde åbner munden, så lytter man. Så kan du ikke lige, fordi interviewet er jo på engelsk. Det ville være underligt, hvis vi sad og simultant tolkede det samtidig. Så man får hele motivitten på engelsk. Men kan du ikke lige give lytterne en hurtig lytteguide? Hvad skal man lytte efter, og hvad er ligesom hovedpointerne i det, vi skal høre nu?
Jeg synes, der er sådan to ting, man kan lytte efter. Jeg synes, det var rigtig spændende at kunne spørge Christine Lagarde om nogle af de ting, som danskerne taler om. For tit så er det jo ligesom sådan, at der kommer den europæiske centralbank ridende, og de bestemmer, hvad de snakker om. Så jeg spurgte hende om de høje fødevarepriser, som danskerne taler om. Jeg spurgte hende om boligpriserne, som mange danskere også enten er henrygte eller bekymrede over, alt efter om man er inde eller uden for boligmarkedet. Jeg synes, det var interessant at høre hendes refleksioner som centralbankdirektør, fordi hun jo har en finger med i spillet. Mm. Hun sætter renterne. Og renterne er altså med til at afgøre, hvad inflationen er, både på agurker, men også på ejerlejligheder. Og så taler vi selvfølgelig om nogle af de ting, som fylder rigtig meget i hendes arbejde. De store linjer, den økonomiske stabilitet i Europa. Mm. Hvor er vi egentlig henne? Danmark som lille land i en turbulent verden. Og Europa, som måske skal finde en ny position i verden. Og så må man jo også bare forholde hende, at hun har mødt Donald Trump. Mm. Tror hun, at handelsballaden er overbaseret på
det? Om det er slut? Kasper, skal jeg ikke bare trykke play, og så kan vi høre det, og så god weekend derude.
God weekend til alle.
So, welcome to Denmark, Madam President.
Thank you so much. Very nice being here.
So, this is Denmark, a European country, an EU member country, but not a Euro country. As a president of the European Central Bank, is this to you home turf or away ground?
Well, it's very nice to be in Copenhagen and to be in Denmark, and we all feel very much welcome in a European country and a very friendly one. So the belonging to the euro area is another matter, and one that is a matter for political and national decision at some stage.
Mm. I've heard that you like to carry cash, right?
Always, yes.
Always. Your signature is on the euro banknote. It's not on the Danish crown banknotes. Is that okay with you?
It's absolutely fine. Yes, 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 of course.
Mm. We've just established that we don't use euro here in Denmark. But we do have a currency peg with the euros, which means that we mimic most of your interest rate decisions at the ECB. Mm. Sitting in front of me, is it the real central bank governor of Denmark, Christine Lagarde?
You know what we have in common between Denmark and the whole of the euro area is that we are both open economies. We both very much export oriented, and we have strong institutions. I mean, we have lots of things in common. But yeah, the currency is different, and I think that Denmark was very attached to keeping its crown as its currency. But as you said, pegged to the euro. And I know for a fact from discussing with my colleague and friend, the governor of the Central Bank of Denmark, Christian, that quite often when we make a decision in monetary policy terms, shortly thereafter, a similar decision is taken by the National Central Bank of Denmark. But I think it has been helpful because of stability, predictability, and a macro environment where investors, consumers, people in general feel confident that there is stability.
But would you say that you do hold a degree of power
to the Danish economy as the ECB central bank governor due to this mimicking of interest rate moves?
I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't call it power. I think any central bank is powerful if it delivers on its mission. And this is very much what we are trying to do, both in the euro system, me at the ECB, and in Denmark with my colleague from the National Central Bank of Denmark. But I don't have authority or power over Denmark at all.
But some influence.
Some friendly influence, because geared towards stability and predictability, yes.
So as you go along setting interest rates at the ECB, this has impact in the Eurozone, of course, but also beyond in Denmark. And one of the things where this influence is quite significant is in house prices. Mm-hmm. In Denmark, we've seen rising house prices during the last couple of years. It has made some people very wealthy, but other groups, young people, lower income groups, see themselves shut out of the market. To what extent do you see this as a problem?
You know, it is not this housing problem that you described is not specific to Denmark. It is equally of concern in many other European countries and in many other euro area countries. It is predominantly in the capitals of the countries. You know, you look at the Netherlands, you look at Ireland, you look at a few other countries. In the capital of those countries, housing is an issue because prices have gone up significantly, often regarded as a safe haven destination for those who had savings, and also because of lack of supply. You clearly have an issue of supply when there is not enough construction, when there is not enough public housing, and when you have young people coming to the markets hoping to find the first apartment, the first house. And that's a big issue. I don't think it's essentially attributable to interest rates, because interest rates have to target an inflation level, which we do target and which we have now reached.
But a side effect would be rising house prices to a certain extent from lowering interest rates.
Well, you know, it depends, because it leads to higher mortgage rates if interest rates are on the way up, but lower mortgage rates if interest rates are on the way down. So I don't think you can simply settle that housing prices are caused by interest rates.
But how do we go about the rising cost of buying a house, an apartment in a capital like Copenhagen? Should we see this as merely the facts of the market, or is there a social issue here?
This is something that needs to be determined by the political leaders, by government. There is an issue of demand and supply that we all have to be cognizant of. If you have little supply and high demand, of course, the adjustment will be done through prices. And then there is the other issue, which is the issue of financing the housing, which then is a factor of the mortgage, whether it's fixed rate, floating rates, and what is the interest rates, itself determined by how well we fight inflation. So it's not a black and white situation. It's a multifaceted factor, but it's a big issue for young people in particular when they look for the first dwelling, and it's hard.
What would you say to them?
To the young people? Well, I would say see locally how you can exercise your voice, express your views, and obtain probably more supply. I think it's very often an issue of supply.
Another hot topic of concern to many Danes within economics is rising and high food price levels. Mm-hmm. Overall inflation in most of Europe, also in Denmark, is looking pretty stable. But food prices, as an example here in Denmark, are still rising 5 to 6% year on year for the months of this year. What's the impact to ordinary households of this, do you think?
Well, food is a critically important element of a family's budget. First thing you want to do is put food on the table. So food prices matter enormously.
But I would observe that the Danish inflation is very much under control. Actually, last year, Danish inflation was lower than euro area inflation. It's gone up a bit this year, but you're pretty much at target of 2%, if I recall. But food prices depend a lot on commodity prices. Sometimes they depend on one or two key items. For instance, last year, coffee prices that went up very much caused food prices to increase in general. But food is a key component, and we monitor those prices as carefully as we can for the euro area.
Yeah, and food prices, as I mentioned, in a lot of European countries are still rising quite rapidly.
I wouldn't go as far as that. You have, you know, in a basket of the critical items, you have food, you have heating for the house, you have the dwelling cost, you have petrol for the car, you have services, you have all sorts of things. And we classify them in categories. You have the non-energy industrial goods, you have the food, you have energy. The one that has been the most volatile of all is oil and gas, energy costs. That has gone up and down, and so these ones have been really difficult to anticipate and predict. It's getting a bit better now, but food as was high, declined significantly, rose again a bit. So it's not a massive increase. I would say energy costs have been much more volatile than food costs.
But for the Danes facing the 5 to 6% food inflation does feel like quite a lot. You're saying
relative
it's not
to
that much.
No, it's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that relative to a target of 2, that's high. It means that somewhere else you have much lower prices. And I would bet that goods, for instance, are probably much, much lower.
So they should look at the whole basket.
You have to look at the whole basket. You don't eat goods, let's face it. So you're also very careful with food prices. Yes.
Yeah, sure. A lot of the discussion in Denmark regarding rising food prices is that some of it, the inflation may be unexplainable. It's also a term I think used in some ECB analysis looking back at food prices rising in recent years, that it's hard to explain some of the inflation in foods. Your analysis speculate a bit about this maybe profits. Do you think somebody is making a profit off this?
You know, when you look at that, a lot is attributable to the commodity prices. And that is something that can vary depending on climate, on the harvesting, on geopolitical circumstances, the way the market is organized. There might be some margin taking along the supply chain, can happen, but I don't think that you can reduce it and say that this is margins essentially.
So in general, nobody is creaming the profit, you think?
I don't think that you can reduce it to that. It would be oversimplistic in my humble view.
A lot of European citizens feeling rising food prices and experiencing them may look to the European Central Bank and say, Madam President, isn't it supposed to be your role to secure stable prices when we go to the grocery store, when we go to the supermarket, when we do our daily shopping? We can't see the stable prices. Have you failed in this manner?
You know, I go to supermarkets and to the grocery store myself, okay? And I do compare prices. And I know that what has happened over the last of 4 years, let's well say a little longer than that, actually, is that because of inflation, which did rise significantly after the crisis we went through, COVID, the energy crisis, Russian and unjustifiable invasion of Ukraine, prices went up. We had inflation. And what happens is that when prices go up, even if you stabilize inflation, as we have, 2% across the board, medium term, blah, 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 the level has increased. And what you see when you go to a grocery store, what I see when I go to the department store or the grocery stores in particular, is that that level has stayed, because very few prices actually go down. They stay at the level, and we are, you know, reasonably satisfied if we can keep them stable or limit the increase, the regular increase of prices at target of 2%. This is what we see.
Let's take a look at the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. The world has become a more uncertain place in the last few years. There's increased competition between three major blocs, the US, China, Europe. Mm-hmm. In your view, how is Europe doing in that competition?
The whole situation, as you indicated, has become more unpredictable, and the level of uncertainty rose very much in the course of April 2025. That's when it was at the highest level. We try to measure uncertainty, and it went way up in April. It gradually reduced as negotiations were started and eventually were completed in July and then formalized in August with an agreement between Europe and the United States concerning tariff. So the high uncertainty that we saw has declined. Has it gone back to the pre-COVID days? No. So we still have uncertainty around, and everybody has to deal with it under the most recently negotiated agreements for Europe, but also for other countries.
So how is Europe doing in that competition? Are we doing fine, or?
You know, it's impossible to have to pass a judgment of that nature, because it's there are multiple sectors, there are multiple trade partners, and there is a domestic market and the export markets. It's you know, it requires a lot more than that. But, you know, we're having at the moment in Copenhagen a meeting of all the finance ministers of Europe. And I can assure you, for having participated in those meetings, that there is a determination to make sure that Europe is more competitive, that it manages to simplify many of the rules and the red tape that sometimes slow us down way too much. And I'm confident that we will go in that direction, and that what we are seeing in terms of additional obstacles, increased tariffs, potential competition, artificial intelligence getting into the processes that we have, will actually stimulate us to go in the direction of improving our game.
Are we moving fast enough?
That's always a difficult question, because we are not a single state with one person calling the shots and making decisions. We are a group of 27 countries that are trying to work together, and that has a price. It's the price of the democratic processes that we apply to reach decisions, to implement decisions. So everybody will agree that it's too slow, too laborious, and that we need to move faster.
Staying with the theme of an uncertain world, Denmark is a small economy, export-driven. What we do is that we sell our goods abroad. Mm-hmm. That's the way we create our income here. What vulnerabilities comes with being a small country in a large and turbulent world that seems to be changing quite rapidly right now?
You know, one benefit that a small country has is that you have an agility that is probably stronger and faster than that of very large countries. When decisions are made here, I think it travels quite fast and it leads to change. But you know, when I look at your numbers, the numbers for Denmark, whether it is growth, much higher in Denmark than the average in the euro area. When I look at inflation, pretty much under control in Denmark. When I look at your unemployment and employment numbers, pretty strong. When I look at the skill set of the Danish people and the labor force, pretty high. So you have a lot of very, very positive attributes that help you being a very performing economy.
So,
and you have some industries that are incredibly strong. Now, you're going, given the approach you're taking, say, oh, but this is negative because we are overly dependent on the pharmaceutical industry. You know what? When you have a strong sector, enjoy it, push it, support it, and that will draw you know, more sectors around, and it will attract talents.
Yeah, let's address the issue of what you may call supersized companies. Very large corporations have been driving, a handful of them have been driving the Danish economy in recent years. Mm-hmm. We used to have a large backbone of small and medium-sized companies driving the economy, but in the recent...
They haven't disappeared.
No, but the drivers of the economy for the last 10, 20, 25 years have been the large corporations. Yeah. Now we have this one very large corporation, Novo Nordisk, the pharmaceutical giant, facing challenges, has led economists to downgrade their projections for growth for the country as a whole. That doesn't seem very healthy. But should
funny
we?
You should say that for a pharmaceutical company, not healthy, okay? No, but look, you know, it's as if you were saying for the U.S., you know, equity market, oh, you know, it's led by seven very large players and the rest is not doing so well. When you have the seven, quite happy with that. When you have those big companies, particularly in the pharmaceutical sectors, well, they lead the game, they lead the charge, and that is, you know, valuable for the entire economy and for the entire country. But that company faces competition somewhere else. It's hardly surprising because there was such a fantastic niche market for them. So somebody else is looking at it and saying, well, maybe we want a little bit of that market as well. The key thing, I believe, is that whether it's in Denmark and in pharmaceutical or whether it is somewhere else, is to continuously step ahead and work on innovation, on new processes, on new, you know, pharmaceutical inventions.
But could a company, a small company, become too dependent on very few big corporations?
You mean a country, not a company? You said a company.
Sorry. Yeah. Could a country, a small country like Denmark, become too dependent on one or two very large companies?
It's always better to have, you know, a basket of companies, so that if one is in, you know, failing a bit or slowing down a bit, then the others can make up for that. But a country as industrious and with all the attributes that Denmark has is going to bounce back and will find alternative support by other companies.
Recently, a deal was signed between the EU on one side and the US on the other side. Von der Leyen and Donald Trump sat there. They'd signed a deal on trade. Is that deal a good deal?
You know, what matters for us as central bankers is whether the level of uncertainty has reduced or not. And I would say that from that perspective, the level of uncertainty has reduced by about 50%, and that's a significant improvement from where we were. The average tariff at which now products are being exported from Europe to the United States has moved from, you know, 3-ish% to 13%. So that's an additional 10% of tariffs that is paid by the exporters. Companies are going to adjust. Am I suggesting that it could have been better, that it, if it was lower, it would be more convenient? Yeah, of course. But a deal is a deal. The uncertainty has gone down. People who are exporting, companies which have the US as their destination, it's only 17% of our export, by the way, they know what the conditions are and they're going to deal with it.
But regarding the certainty or uncertainty, Donald Trump is already talking about new tariffs. He's expanded the steel and aluminium tariffs to include a lot more products, hitting a lot of Danish companies too. The businesses I talk to here, their message is that we don't see that certainty that this deal gives. Have you been overestimating the certainty?
No, we hear the same story. Look, as I told you, uncertainty was here, went up there, it is now here. Okay, so it has reduced by 50%, but we still have a degree of uncertainty, and this is part of the risk that we have to face, the level of unpredictability of certain of our partners.
You've met Mr. Donald Trump, right?
Sure.
Based on what you know about him, would you say that, okay, I think we've heard the last of the tariff trouble between the EU and the US?
First of all, I met him on several occasions during his first presidency. I have not been, you know, in discussions or had meetings with him in his second presidency. And I think that he's a transactional person, as everybody knows, and he will see the interest of his country. But he also is a business person, and he will appreciate whether, you know, trade can be continued and can be sustained under constantly changing circumstances.
Constantly changing circumstances. So,
no, but it, look, trade tariffs matter for all partners involved: the exporter, the importer, and the consumer in the United States. I think all that has to be considered.
But you don't necessarily think it's over.
This is not what I'm saying.
So please elaborate.
I'm telling you that when you are a business person, you appreciate all the elements in a deal, and you know where it is going to have a mark for the exporter, for the importer, for the consumer. What we are seeing at the moment is that tariffs are absorbed in a limited amount by the exporter, in quite an amount by the importer, and in a significant amount by the consumer. The consumer is the US consumer.
So they're paying it. We touched on it at the beginning of our talk, the euro and Denmark. We've talked about an uncertain world. Would it be a good idea for Denmark to join the euro in an uncertain world?
This is something for the country to decide, for the national authorities to discuss, and for the people at the end of the day to vote upon, because this is subject to a referendum. By the way, my referendum is that I'm going to be on a canal of Copenhagen for a lovely, lovely boat trip with your finance minister, central bank governor, and a few other people. So I'm going to have to bring that to a close. And thank you very much for this interview.
Just to wrap it up,
I think
Madam
you
President.
Did wrap it up.
just to wrap it up. When you were young, you were a synchronized swimmer at a very high level, right? Mm-hmm. You said one of the things that you've learned from synchro, and you still use in your work today, is to hold your breath and smile. When was the last time you had use of that?
It wasn't hold my breath. It was grit your teeth, so, and smile at the same time. So when facing adversity, you toughen up, but you smile, because that's a disposition that you need to have. So I do that all the time, including with you now.
I take that as a compliment.
Of course.
Thank you for talking to us.
Det her, det var så Christine Lagarde i Sorte Tal. På mandag er vi tilbage med en ny udgave Sorte Tal. Mit navn er Ulla Grosenqvist, og kan I have en helt fantastisk weekend.
Der mangler bare en magisk ring, og så har du en underlig kinesisk version af Ringenes Herre.
Tyran fortæller historien om formand Mao Zedong.
Den lange march. 30.000 kommunister slæber sig afsted 9.000 kilometer. Mange af dem har hverken sko eller sandaler. De koger læder, som de synker i håb om bare at få lidt næring. Men tusinder sakker bare mere og mere bagud, indtil de til sidst falder om og dør.
Tyran, en podcast fra P3. Find den i DR Lyd.
Download DR Lyd-appen. Her kan du også høre alle DR's radioprogrammer og podcasts.
Så kan jeg da godt mærke, at jeg ikke er 25 år længere. Der sker nogle ting, både inden og udenpå.
Peter Falktoft har rundet de 40.
Meningen med det her program, det er at blive klædt godt på til anden halvleg i tilværelsen.
Og det taler han med sine erfarne gæster om.
Jeg tænker faktisk aldrig på alder. Jeg har haft så travlt hele mit liv med, hvad kan jeg nu gøre?
Tom Christensen, hvor gammel er du så?
Jamen 47, det holder godt.
Lad være at tage dig selv mere højtidligt, end godt det er.
Efter 40, så foreslår jeg, at man sidder ned og tisser.
Hør Peter og profeterne nu i DR Lyd.
Download DR Lyd-appen. Her kan du også høre alle DR's radioprogrammer og podcasts.